Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
We continue our new regular feature on the Roundtable entitled Ideas Matter, checking in with the public humanities. It is our chance to check in with the humanities councils throughout our seven-state listening area to discuss important ideas and why they do indeed matter. This morning, we spotlight Pennsylvania and specifically their project, The Souls of Black Baseball. Bob Allen, a former philosophy instructor at Penn State, has spent the last 10 years traveling in the United States, visiting and interviewing every surviving player of the Negro Leagues in an effort to preserve the history and stories of Negro League baseball. He's currently working on an oral history project titled The Souls of Black Baseball, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Bob, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. It's nice to be with you.
It is a great pleasure. How did this come about with the Pennsylvania Humanities Council and speaking about this particular topic?
Well, I suppose some years back I applied with the council. Those of us in Pennsylvania, as in some of the other states that have the Humanities Councils, we have the privilege of going around our states and sharing with people some of our areas of interest, which include the arts. In my case, it's a sport history, that of black baseball. And I was welcomed by the council. I guess I've been doing presentations for 3 or 4 years now for them, getting to share my experience, which was really the ability to share the past history of black baseball with the players themselves. My project, as you described, has been to videotape interviews, in-depth interviews with the survivors of the Negro League baseball period.
What got you into that in the beginning? Initially,
well, it's an interesting little history in itself. The short version is simply an old friend of mine who has been an athlete, and we're both kind of diehard Phillies fans, even in the bad years. He said to me one day, he'd met some players, African-Americans who'd played back in the day, and he talked with a number of them at an event, and he said, "You've got to go talk to them." He knew I did oral history work where I do interviews of people of different types of history. He said, if you talk with these people, you're going to get the bug," and I did. So I went to meet Max Manning, who was a pitcher for the Newark Eagles first day, and after a two-hour videotaped interview, I knew I was hooked. And so I've devoted a lot of my time, as you said earlier, about 7, 8 years, almost nonstop, to find every player who I could find who'd survived. And these gentlemen are typically, right now, they're in their late 80s. At that point, they're in their early 80s, and so I was trying to track them down so their stories wouldn't get lost.
Mm. So you are fighting the clock in this regard.
Well, that's a sad thing. When I did this first wonderful interview with Max Manning outside of Atlantic City, it was late in the day. It was January 4th, and the sun was going down, and I realized it was kind of typical of what I was going to be facing. I was going to get bathed in the sunlight of these great athletes, but then sometime soon they would disappear, and sadly, many of them have passed. But I feel that I got to know them. I got to know many of them very personally, almost like family, and I got to preserve their stories. We all have to pass someday, but keeping this legacy, I think that's part of the reason that the PHC, in our case, we do things of this sort. We try to preserve this for our young people, especially. They can understand a bygone period and I think learn a lot from it.
Talk a little bit about that legacy and the importance of preserving it and preserving these stories of the Negro League.
Well, I think one of the key things, Joe, is that This is America's pastime. Some days now we think, well, maybe football, basketball have become our pastime. That may be true. But there's a legacy of baseball, which is at the core of American history, that is so important. Many of our immigrants that came into the country, and most of us are immigrants from somewhere, we all are, we came into the country, and one way we could assimilate into American culture was through baseball. And then people just love baseball. And in the days that my guys played, back, these guys are the second generation, in the 30s and 40s, you could go anywhere 20 miles here or there, you'd find a baseball game this time of year. And so, you know, baseball really absorbed the country. And, of course, these fellows and some women who played in the leagues were denied the opportunity to go to what was called the highest level, the major leagues. But they, in spite of that, they loved the game. They wanted to play baseball, so they did. And so, of course, I think for our young people, one thing to learn from this and for all of us is that when there's adversity, there's different ways to respond to it. What they did was kind of climb over it, climb around it, and bat their way toward a very good future in athletics. Some of us aren't sports-minded, perhaps, but if it's music or whatever we find that might be kind of pursuing our dream, we can do it, and we can do it in the face of obstacles. So there's kind of an American go to it kind of spirit here, which these gentlemen and ladies perform. So I think it's very inspiring, and we certainly need inspiration these days. Sometimes when we look at the news, we're surrounded by a lot of negatives, and they're real and they're there, but there are ways to come around them and go over them and through them.
I think it's fascinating because you can look specifically at any one athlete and also as a group of what black baseball accomplished, but also zooming out a little bit of looking at the role that baseball and sports played in integrating the entire country.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that happened in this kind of tragic period, the Jim Crow period after Reconstruction had ended in the South, but all around the United States there was segregation to some degree. But in fact, long before the Civil Rights Movement, the Negro League players, and there were boxers and some other sports figures, they were actually integrating the country because people got used to seeing them perform. Even throughout the South, even at the time and after there had been laws prohibiting interracial sport contests, it still went on. And another great example is in our military. Most of the Negro League guys that I've gotten to meet, of course, were of the generation like my father who went into World War II. And even though they were in segregated units abroad in the Pacific Theater and the European Theater, when it came down to baseball, if the base commander saw they had talent, they'd get them on a team, which was maybe a white team. And in effect, they integrated the armed forces before the 1948 Truman Order for segregation. So they were pioneers in civil rights, even though they weren't trying to do that. They just did it through, as I said, batting their way and pitching their way towards some kind of excellence and showing that they were just like all of us. They were the good and bad pitchers and good and bad players, and they were Americans. And they came back from that war, and that was a big impetus, I think, to what originally became, after a point, the civil rights movement.
The organization of the leagues, I found surprising, of how organized ultimately they were.
Yeah, if you go back into baseball history, if you look back in the origins of baseball itself, of course it was a game, it had different varieties, and as it got to be more and more standardized and became the game we know today, more or less, one thing that had to happen at some point in the American experience was we had to make a business of it. We had a way to sustain it. And I don't mean it had to be a moneymaker so much, but there had to be a way to provide uniforms and equipment, of course, fields. And to do that in the early segments, the white owners and the white players had faced the same problems. Many leagues came in and out. They left. They disappeared after a few weeks or a few seasons. Likewise, with the black leagues, same thing happened. It just happened a little later. But when they did become organized, which is the formal period of Negro League baseball from 1920 to about 1960-61, they were structured. Their pioneer, Rube Foster, a pitcher from Texas, he decided he would emulate everything that had happened in that earlier, you might say, Caucasian baseball experience, and he formed leagues with umpires and all the kind of things we're familiar with today. So they had a hard time. It was hard because they didn't have the financial backing. But Negro League baseball became the third largest economic sector of the black community for its time. So it became a very important institution. And it created community. I think that's the thing that's always fascinated me. People really rooted for the team. We see still that today, but it was a special sense of community. And for the players, camaraderie, which was really a wonderful thing inside of this structure, which kind of was their home.
They did root for the team. However, one of the things I find interesting is how the performance and the athleticism of one athlete in the age before communications, other than, it certainly was a lot slower. But through word of mouth, people would know who the really good players were and that they were coming to town.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, as I said, of course, this was true even to the extent of white baseball was much more this way, too, even up through and including the period of the Brooklyn Dodgers when Jackie went into the Dodgers. Baseball had become also by word of mouth in the white community something of emulation for young kids to look to figures. However, you're right, but in the black community, there was the black press. And the black press and some of the white newspapers spread the word on some of the storied players, people like Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, and they stood out. But the The other players who were seemingly, for most of us in the history, a little more out of the limelight, were actually in the limelight for the local communities. They were known and appreciated, you're right. And a lot of it did spread by word of mouth. So we find that people build interest in community even long before cell phones and the other trappings of a much more technological society. And that has a certain sense of it, maybe, that's it's even more valuable. And against to their credit, that they were able to keep track of players and games, and they were really into the game.
How did you come to the title of the Souls of Black Baseball?
Well, I have a subtitle that I called the project. These were voices from the Field of Dreams, and obviously it's taking off from that wonderful film about baseball film about Field of Dreams. But the more I thought about it, and the more I met the guys, and probably after the first year or so, I kind of changed the title because I wanted to get at the idea that I was talking more about just athletes. I know the Souls idea has a little of a religious connotation. It's not intended as such, but the idea is I was trying to look through my camera to look into their eyes and have them look back in their lives and be able to transmit this somehow, you know, sort of magically to the next generation. And that brought to mind this idea of a soul, something that would transcend what, you know, we all know we go through in a life, but something that would be like a legacy. So that seemed like the appropriate word. And as I say, these were fine athletes, but they were fine people. They're just, you would just love to have them on your program and hear them talk, and especially when you can see them, you can see the sparkle in their eye. They might be 85, or I met one gentleman who turned 111. Once he started talking baseball, you knew you'd gone deep into his soul, and his soul was telling you about that period that he lived through.
And are there themes in the sense of what they had, what they didn't have, what they wanted, what they weren't looking for?
Well, of course, the dream, it's kind of ironic given the setting that overall, not everyone, of course, but white culture was in effect denying them the ability to play. And nonetheless, their dream was, Rube Foster, I didn't name him, but the founder of the Negro League period as such, because he formed this structured league that provided, you know, black leagues as a business, as a legitimate, structured playing of a sport competitively. Rube Foster had the vision in 1920, and that's why he gathered some of the baseball people together and says, look, we have to do this the way the white leagues are doing it. He had a vision that there would be integration. He had a vision that we would all play on the same level playing field, black, white, no matter what the color of the skin and so forth. And, of course, now only today, very recently, do we see the globalization of baseball in that sense. But he had that dream, and the players did to some extent, although they just, in the middle of segregation, they didn't feel that, in a sense, they had to go that direction. They went there willingly when the opportunity came, but they just wanted to play. What they didn't have, of course, as I mentioned, they didn't have a strong financial backing. It was very hard for a lot of the owners to maintain the teams. They certainly didn't have equipment. They played official games, most of them really actually on the Major League Baseball fields when the Major League teams were out of town, when they didn't have a homestand. But they were missing so much. They didn't have trainers. They didn't have all the sophistication of the sport today. And yet they played the game with a zest and a lawn. And many of them played injured, for example. They would play injured because the rosters, they didn't have as many on a team. They carried about 16 players traveling around. So they had to be versatile. They had to play different positions when necessary if somebody really got badly injured and so forth. So there was a lot that was lacking, especially by today's standards. But yet, on the other hand, the zeal and the zest for the game was there, and that's what carried them through, perhaps.
It is a fascinating project. Bob Allen's project is The Souls of Black Baseball. You can find out more by going to www.pahumanities.org, pahumanities.org. He is part of the Pennsylvania Humanities Council and their Commonwealth Speakers Program. Bob, thank you very much for sharing what you do, and I wish all the luck in the world. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on the program.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.